Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. $147 million is urgently needed to support people fleeing Ethiopia's Tigray region into neighboring Sudan, the UN refugee agency UNHCR said on Monday. More than 43,000 people have fled fighting in Ethiopia in recent weeks, and almost half of them are children. Leading the appeal, UN refugee chief Filippo Grandi welcomed Sudan's open border policy to vulnerable people before noting that the government of Sudan needs a lot of help. The UN agency is expecting 100,000 people to arrive by April next year, although the worst-case scenario is for an influx of 200,000. The new appeal aims to fund crisis response by the UN and partners in Sudan for the next 6 months. In a related development, the UN World Food Programme, WFP, said that lack of funding had forced it to cut rations for refugees in East Africa, while WFP Ethiopia urgently needs $209 million to help 6.2 million people from now until next May. The UN agency said that the fighting between the Ethiopian National Forces and the Tigray People's Liberation Front had displaced more than 100,000 civilians, including those who had fled into eastern Sudan since the 4th of November. The coronavirus pandemic is undermining efforts to curb malaria, the UN World Health Organization WHO has said. According to the World Malaria Report, released on Monday, the situation is particularly concerning in high-burden countries in Africa. The continent accounts for more than 90% of the overall disease burden. Though preventable and curable, malaria continues to claim hundreds of thousands of lives each year. According to WHO, nearly half of the world's population is at risk of the disease, and most cases and deaths occur in sub-Saharan Africa. The UN agency urged nations and health partners to step up the fight against malaria with better targeting of interventions, new tools, and increased funding. It is time for leaders across Africa and the world to rise once again to the challenge of malaria, just as they did when they laid the foundation for the progress made since the beginning of this century, said WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. Through joint action and a commitment to leaving no one behind, we can achieve our shared vision of a world free of malaria, he insisted. Alarm now over escalating violence in the Indonesian provinces of Papua and West Papua, where the UN Human Rights Office, OHCHR, said on Monday that there have been repeated reports of killings and intimidation of protesters and human rights defenders. In a call for meaningful and inclusive dialogue to address communities' long-standing economic, social and political grievances, the UN office expressed concerns at reports that military and security forces and nationalist militias were involved in the escalating situation. In one incident just days ago, a 17-year-old was shot dead and another teenager injured in an alleged police shootout in West Papua, OHCHR said. The violence began when armed Papuan elements killed 19 people working on the Trans-Papua Highway in Nduga Regency in December 2018. In September and October this year, at least 8 people were killed, including 2 members of the security forces and activists and church workers, OHCHR noted. The UN office also pointed to the arrest of at least 84 people detained on the 17th of November ahead of the implementation of the Special Autonomy Law in Papua and West Papua provinces amid long-standing calls for independence. In a statement, OHCHR urged the government of Indonesia to uphold people's rights to freedom of expression, peaceful assembly and association in line with its international obligations. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
John Grant is getting him on here. Pete, there you go. You're on, John.
I'm in. Okay.
You're
I'm
in,
hooked
man.
Up.
You're in.
Directly from southeast Pennsylvania.
From northeast
Kansas. To northeast Kansas.
To Donnie Trump going out. You're in. Donnie's out.
Out the Donnie's door.
Good. out the door, man. I mean, yeah, I can't. Yeah, I don't think he can. He's not growing up. He's growing out. I mean, I think.
Yeah,
that's the problem,
well, I
man.
Think you know, you get to be 70. What is he? 74. You're older than me. You know, you get to be this old. It's a little late to change, you know. It's like you can't change a leopard's spots when he gets that old, you know. It's just the way it is, you know.
Well, John, I have to tell you, writing at thiscan'tbehappening.net, at thiscan'tbehappening, at thiscan'tbehappening.net, John Grant, you have the cognitive skills far exceeding. I mean, you're sort of Star Trek compared to Donnie Trump.
Star Trek. Space Odyssey.
Yeah, well, you're just like, Jesus.
Space
man.
Is the place.
Yeah. Do you really think Donnie has written anything in the last, I don't know, 4 years? I mean,
that's an interesting question, the idea of Donald Trump actually writing something other than a tweet, you know.
Right. Seriously.
I think, you know, that is the fundamental problem. You know, in fact, I had a rather instructive situation last night. I was reading a New Yorker article by Jane Mayer about the future of Donald Trump, you know, facing New York State and New York City indictments for various, you know, dozens of crimes, apparently, some of them pretty serious. And the idea of Donald Trump and what he might do after the presidency and you know, being who he is. And then at the same time, while I was reading this during the ads, I was watching Stephen Colbert's interview with Barack Obama, which is the best
one
I've
ever
heard, because he was, you know, he's very funny. And Obama is, he's a brilliant man, and timing-wise, he's like a stand-up comic. I mean, he's very funny.
Yeah.
He tells great jokes. And, of course, he just wrote a 700-page memoir that's only part one. You know, that's the first term. And, you know, and so you think of President Obama, of course, according to Trump, was born in, the shithole country of Kenya, you know, but that's all besides the point. That Donald Trump, who can write a tweet, mostly grammatical, but sometimes not, you know, a sort of a brief, bloviating utterance, you know. And
there you go.
Compared to a guy who can see the world and his experiences through the prosaic view of 700 pages of prose, you know. You look at this and you go like, wow, what does this tell you about the leadership of the United States of America circa 2020, you know? I know it's hard for some people to look at this way, but I think they're actually going to have to look at it that way. This is my theory, that once Donald Trump is absent, the mantle, the vast, incredible mantle of power he has as, you know, President of the United States of America, once that's gone, you know, whether he's indicted or not, the value of his tweets go down precipitously, because he doesn't have power. It's as simple as that, you know. Here's a man who has no interest in the truth, small t or capital T, at all. He's all about power. Whatever fantasy I have, I want to manifest it in the world with my power. You know, once that power, mantle power he has, is gone, you know, as he told somebody I was just reading, he was in the car with them, and he was looking at all the fans who were screaming at him. Donald Trump told this writer, reporter, whoever it was, that, you know, this is fantastic. I don't know if I can live without this, he said. I can't go back to real estate, you know, figuring out you know, how many windows in an apartment or something, you know, on a floor, you know, I just, and you think of the poor fellow's predicament. You know, I mean, this is the prosaic idea of tragedy that Aristotle and Shakespeare all dealt with. You know, a person, you know, he gets himself up to be president of the United States. He didn't even plan at it. He didn't expect it, you know. It was just going to be good for his resume, you know, that he ran. But now he's got it, and he can never replace it. It's just impossible. So, you know, I mean, it's almost you have sympathy for the man. I hate to say it.
Well, you heard it first here.
You know, as a character, I mean, just as a character in literature and history, and rather than just the gotcha polarized politics of the moment, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my opening riff.
Well, the guy is. I mean, the people who adore him have a tendency. I mean, first off, let's look at this. It's been cited all over the internet, and it's I can't remember who did the poll, but it's 70% of the people who voted for Don. Well, there's 70. Let's get this part. 71 million maybe voted for Donald Trump.
Sure.
And of that, 70% think that there's a possibility that the election had problems. Okay. And then
well, that's what he's drilling into them. Yes. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's like what? I mean, 70% of 70 million. That's a shitload of people.
Literally a very accurate term, a shitload of people. Yes, that's true.
And 35% of that is like it was rigged. The massive voter fraud. There should be a re-election. That's one he's out into just. I mean, that's dangerous, man. That kind of outrage that is bubbling underneath the surface, and he's turning the heat up. He's turning the heat up every day.
He doesn't have any other options. He seems to be, you know, that's the problem with somebody who tweets and doesn't have the resources in their mind to think in terms of, as an example, 700 pages of prose, you know, about your experience.
Right.
Is that it's simple. It's simple-minded, and it's just simply based on power. And once the power's gone, it just turns out to be simple stuff, you know. And you wonder where he can go with it. It's a major question. And I'm of the school, along with several people who were interviewed and quoted by Jane Mayer in the New Yorker. That it will behoove him in sort of a plan B, I suppose, and the suggestion is he's probably setting up this plan B, you know, that with prosecutions lined up, and, you know, he's already been, you know, individual number one deemed guilty in the case that put Cohen away in jail, you know.
Right.
I mean, technically, they already convicted the man, you know. So, you know, I think he'll probably, the smartest thing for him to do would be to leave the country, to go to some place that doesn't have an extradition treaty with the United States. And he can, you know, be given a carte blanche over there, a nice little palace, and he'll have all the internet connections in the world, and this is the modern world. You could be anywhere. You know, you could be on a satellite going around Earth and connected. You could run the world that way, you know, in the world we live in and now. So why wouldn't he do that to save himself? Because, you know, he is seriously vulnerable to jail time, you know. If people persist enough in prosecuting him, So why wouldn't he do that? And of course, the whole time the argument would be, I was run out of the country. They stole the election, and I'm not going to live in a country that's so corrupt and so horrible and all this that would throw me out when I was the best president since Abraham Lincoln and all that. And so why wouldn't he do that? If it was up to me and I was trying to save my ass, I think I would consider that very seriously. Idea that, you know.
What? Did I lose you?
And then thumb his nose, and so what then is his base, if this is the case, I don't know, this is my speculative scenario, what then is his base, the people who really love him, those 71 million or the 70% of those 71 million, how can they sustain this adoration of a man who has fled the country because he's facing prosecution? Wait a minute. Are you American? Are you going to wave the goddamn flag or what here?
I don't think Jane Mayer, that's an outstanding article, listeners. In the New Yorker magazine. I don't think she addressed that part. What will happen? That wasn't the point.
Well, she speculated. A couple interviewees speculated that one guy said, he said sort of jokingly that people say he's going to have a new show on Fox or he's going to start a competing network against Fox. Well, why would he do that if he's facing prosecution? That's serious. Now, the guy then speculated, I suppose with a chuckle, that, well, maybe he would have a show on RT, Russian television,
Right.
Well, we laugh. I mean, I have good friends who write for RT, It's like...
Yeah, I know. Anybody can get on RT.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
I used to be on RT.
Anybody can get on RT.
Finally, I told him, hey, I'm sorry, personally, nothing against you, but I don't think this is good for my resume right now, to be perfectly self-interested,
Well, they paid, but I'm sure.
Well, they never paid me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, the point is, I think, is that Donnie's in a real. Jane Mayer has a good point, and I tend to think he's more likely to run than start up another media outlet, and I think. He's just using them all, And when Fox turned on him, I mean, let's be frank. I was discussing that with our truck driving brother just last night, and he was reminding me that the MAGA Million March, whatever that was.
Right.
But all it took was one. It was maybe 10, 15,000, maybe 20. I doubt that. People that showed up and they were engaging uncensored in the chant, fuck Fox. They were yelling fuck Fox.
It has a nice alliteration almost. I like that. Fuck Fox. Yeah.
I mean, they turned on Fox on a dime. I mean, it was Alex Jones, I think, or somebody was there on a bullhorn and got them to yell it, and they all yelled it.
I'm seeing it out here.
People are leaving Facebook.
Yeah.
My quote-unquote conservative, whatever, right-wing
friends
are leaving Facebook, going to different places like Parler.
Parler, I've heard of that.
They're trashing Fox on Facebook. And I'm sort of like watching this and going, Jesus, how close I am to the good Germans,
in the heartland, the red state heartland. But the question is all these numbers here, you got 71 million, 70% of that. How many of those people, as it parses out over time, as this, as Donald Trump, again, as I say, very importantly, is stripped of power. He doesn't have this power that's given him such arrogance and audacity and following. Without that power, how many of those people are going to drift away to the remnants of the Republican Party with the Republicans who are trying to resurrect some integrity, like, for instance, the Secretary of State of Georgia, even the goddamn governor of Georgia, who is a former Secretary of State, who probably stole the election from Stacey Abrams. He's even now trashed by Donald Trump, like he's trashing Fox, you know? And you wonder how much of that is, you know, how much of those people can he hold? He'll hold on to some, but they will be such concentrated lunatics on extremes that, you know, we just have to arm ourselves, you know, against them, you know, because they're going to be so out of their minds. I tell you, life with Donald Trump is always interesting, and it will continue to be interesting, which, you know, is what he wants, what he adores. He needs adoration and attention. I was reminded of that dynamic when my brother sent me a video, a friend had sent him, of a concert given by Elvis Presley 2 months before he died, you know.
Was this in Hawaii?
I don't know where exactly it was, but it's actually very, very moving. The man is grossly overweight, wearing this bizarre sort of cross between a space suit and a bishop's outfit, you know, with all this glitter on him, you know, and he's got it down to his navel opened up, his little gut there, and, you know, having had a heart attack while he was singing this song, I could imagine the heart chest pains he was having, you know.
Right.
And the poor guy is pouring his heart out on this song, which he just wrote, called Unchained Melody, and singing, you know, I need your love, and all, you know, that famous song.
Oh, I know
song.
That song.
Oh, yeah. And God, you know, the man, he loved his mama so much, and he loved all his women. He adored his women. Yeah. He needed his women. And this is this love song of, you know, to women. But it's also a love song to the adoration from the crowd, you know, and I need your love. And after they applaud him, and he's grinning like a kid, you know, he's like, hey, I still got it. You know, I still got it. You know, could see that he knows what a tragic mess he is at this point. But God damn it, he's still got it. They love me. And he gets up and, you know, you realize that the dependence of somebody like that has on adoration, and that they'll do anything, you know, to continue that. And, of course, this is the basis of Aristotle's description of tragedy. You know, you're driven to this. And, of course, 2 months later, he dies, straining on the toilet because he's taking so many opiates. I mean, this is... we laugh, but it's very sad. And because the guy's, he has a great voice, and it's a beautiful song. It's like, you know, I need your love. It's just, I was moved, you know. And so it made me think about the movie Elvis and Nixon, about the December 21, 1970 visit by Elvis to the White House, unannounced, completely unannounced. He drives up, and I say, I want to see the president. You know, you want to see the president? Well, they strip him of his loaded 357 Magnum in the White House entrance room, right? You know, you can't take this into the president. Okay. You know, this is 1970. And so Nixon apparently at first, who is this guy? Who wants to see me? Elvis? Elvis? The king. Oh, the king. Right. Oh, sure. I'll see him.
Oh, yeah, the king.
And there's this famous picture. And they made a movie of it with Michael Shannon as Elvis and Kevin Spacey as Nixon. And it's a lot of fun. It's a great movie, and it's on Netflix. Everybody should watch it. But it just shows the vulnerability of these folks, you know. And I would put Elvis and Nixon and Trump in sort of similar categories of this as, you know, individuals, especially vulnerable males, you know, and all of them tragic figures. And so it's going to be interesting to see the arc of that tragedy in the coming years with Donald Trump. So I don't know, you know, again, you know, I'm thinking of it in terms of like literature rather than polarized at the moment politics, but you know, it's a pretty amazing narrative to watch, and you know, there's going to be a rash of movies coming out about Donald Trump. Showtime, he already did one with Brendan Gleeson, that great Irish actor, as Trump. I'm waiting for John Voight as Trump. He's, to me, I think, the best Trump you could get, you know.
Oh, God.
But I think it would be good because Voight, it's as right-wing as he is a great actor. He's a wonderful actor.
Well, he's gonna do a hack job. I mean, he's not going to do a movie that's anywhere near audience value. I mean, really. I mean, well, maybe.
Well, who
knows? It could be a Steve Bannon. The Steve Bannon production, you know.
I would disagree. I think Voight is enough of an artist that he would say, okay, you know, maybe I don't agree with everything in the movie, but I am going to give this man heart and soul, and I'm going to make you really give a shit about this character, you know. And I, you know, because I'm sure Voight voted for him. You know, and so, and I don't know. I'm just speculating off the chart.
Well, wait a minute. Let's think about this. Hollywood can do this. Can you imagine John Voight portraying Donald Trump in a movie, giving a CGI, CGI special effects of the actor giving the real John Voight on videotape his Medal of Freedom, because he did.
Donald Trump, there you go. That would be a real twist. That would be a lot of fun, wouldn't it? Really, really, as I say, postmodern, you know, that's like really hip.
Right. Well, I'm just thinking as a director, you know, I'm thinking as a movie.
Of course,
We could do CGI. John, what do you think of that? John Voight. John, Mr. Voight, what do you think of that? We'll have you.
Yeah, I like it. In fact, Donnie. It reminds me, what was the, the movie with Tom Hanks, you know, about the Southern retarded fellow.
Forrest Gump.
Remember those scenes of Forrest Gump getting the Medal of Honor from Lyndon Johnson and showing him his butt wound and all that?
Right.
That was CGI'd right into a White House award ceremony.
Yeah, you can do that now. You can really do that. So.
Right. Yeah.
Well, where is Donnie going to go? Maybe we should be asking. If you're out there, you're listening on your computer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you want to call in area code 646-716-8652. Where do you think Donnie is going to go? I mean, and how is he going to go? You know, I think that's a good question.
It is a legitimate question that we'll all be focused on for the next several years. Yeah.
Let's see how brave these callers are. If any of them, you have to punch one, listeners, to put up your
hands. Yeah, of course. Maybe my speculation, our speculation, is dead wrong, and maybe he will get a Nobel Peace Prize or something. We'll be totally surprised, and he will, maybe become president of another country or something, and everything will be fine. I don't know, you know. Anything's possible in this world, you know.
He will finally become president of another shithole country.
There you go.
I've created the empire.
And he'll change the name to, you know, Trump. It'll just be the country called Trump.
Yeah, there you go.
somewhere in Trump.
Yeah,
the Republic of Trump. R-O-T.
You'll go to the rump parliament and say, I demand a licensing fee, and we're going to rename the country Trump. Trumpland.
Yeah, like William, you know, there's precedent for that. William Walker famously in the 19th century tried to take over Nicaragua and turn it into a slave state for America. You know, it was that's the history.
Hey,
that's
the
history.
This is after the Civil War, too, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Very
interesting character, William Walker. There's a very flawed, talk about films, there's a flawed work of genius, cinema genius, by Alex Cox, simply called Walker. It's full of anachronisms, these creative anachronisms, you know. There'll be, you know, a scene of the situation, and all of a sudden a conquistador in helmet will be walking by holding a bottle of Pepsi-Cola, you know, and you're going, what the fuck?
That's great. What
kind of world am I in here?
Well, I'll tell you, be honest with you, I saw that movie once late night on television.
Right.
Now, I'm sure it was all cut up, you know, censored. But I was so stoned, I'm going by.
It helps, I think.
I'll tell you, I was like, by the time the next commercial went on, I was thinking, what did I just see?
Exactly.
Yeah. What exactly is that?
Yeah. Well, I have they consider it quite a classic because there's a Criterion of DVD of it, and Criterion only gets the most interesting cinematic events.
Yes.
They consider it quite a bizarre, amazing work. Ed Harris, of course, is Walker. And by the way, I was in Nicaragua when they were filming it, and I went up to make a telephone call at the Hotel Intercontinental in Managua, and I went up. I might as well have their great breakfast, so I went up there early to have breakfast. And I ended up having breakfast next to Ed Harris, who was at the next table. Talking to his one of his stuntmen. They were going to do this scene, and he was working it out. And you know, it was filmed down in on the coast of Nicaragua.
The hurricanes. The news now is they're getting slammed by hurricanes one after another. And
Terrible suffering down there.
Didn't Walker end up getting executed?
Yes. Well, he ended up being executed by the British on the beach in Honduras. They caught him because he was becoming quite a problem for all the international elements, even the U.S. and the British, and finally the British caught him and they tied him up to a pole and a firing squad shot him in the beach in northern Honduras. That was the end of William Walker. And he was a very interesting, apparently he's a very steely-eyed, laconic, quiet kind of person, small stature, I believe. And his wife was deaf. In the movie, there was this deaf actress played her. He was a very interesting character. And his gang was called the Filibusters. These are basically guerrillas or militia people. And as I say, the movie is, I don't know, I guess a fair word would be riotous. You know, it's like some of the scenes that are whoa, this is just actually stupid, you know. But then the whole idea of it is so audacious and wonderful and interesting that you forgive him because there's a war going on when he's making this movie, you know, in a third world country, and so you give him a little lead, a little rope, and you know, the ending is bizarre. Another anachronism. They're in in Granada, and they're tearing up the place. They changed Granada in order to film it. They did a lot of stuff, and so there's fire. The whole Granada. He caused the city of Granada to be burned, and a lot of it, and so Granada is burning, and all this craziness going on, and suddenly a Russian helicopter lands. This takes place in 1870. A Russian helicopter lands, and they all escape by getting in the Russian helicopter and flying away. I guess, and it's supposed to be an American helicopter, right? But this is Nicaragua, and they don't have any American helicopters, so we're using a Russian helicopter. Mike, did I lose you?
Hold on here. I'm looking trying to look something up here. And I got this fucking, there we go, it stopped it. Audio, I'm looking it up. Nope, Walker is not available on Netflix. I'm sorry to report.
Too bad. Why not?
I'm looking at it. I'm going to look again. Now it's not available on. Now wait a minute. It is.
Mm-hmm.
It's only available, listeners. It's, if you want to watch it, it's on Netflix, but you have to get it on DVD.
There you go. You have to get it on DVD, right? In fact, I lucked out and got the Criterion DVD with two DVDs in it for like $1.50 at a thrift shop. I couldn't believe it one day. Yeah.
Well, people don't get it until 10 years later. Some of this stuff. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it is available to the common man. On DVD.
There you go. Check it out.
So I thought,
your assignment is Nixon, or is Elvis and Nixon and Walker.
And Walker, right.
And I would, while I'm at it, also highly recommend, saw it last night with my wife on HBO. At first I was ready not to like this because of the special effects. Jack London's Call of the Wild with Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
And it is the special effects to create this lovable big dog buck, that is called by the wolves and all this, and the trials that Buck goes through. It's a great child's dog story that works for adults. And, it just completely won me over, I think despite or because of the special effects was done so well with the dog, and it was done obviously by people who truly love dogs, that it completely won me over. I was tearing up at the end.
It was better than the old black and white one. I don't
remember that, but I would think they both have their qualities. As I say, there is something Disney-fying and phony about all this special effects with this dog, but once you allow that and you figure, these are tools of our age, and you just let it work its wonders with you, if you will, like art, and that it really won me over. Dog story.
Did it follow Jack London's storyline? Because the original movie did not. I remember that. I was young.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the original Hollywood Call of the Wild production.
Okay.
And I was really disappointed because I'd read the book as a boy, and I said, this isn't anything like the book.
I don't know. I'm not sure I read it so long ago, but I certainly know the story.
Yeah.
But I would think that they've made an effort to be fairly accurate, because all this CGI special effects does is it allows cinema to express what can only be expressed by prose, which is written, and then you imagine it as a movie, if you will, in your mind, as the reader's mind. You envision the story, from the cues given by the pros. Well, you know, in the old days, there was only so much you could do with cinema. But now with this CGI, you can, you know, if Jack London attributes emotions to the dog.
Yeah, he
they,
does.
They can subtly, and they do, manipulate this dog with how it moves its eyebrows and everything, and it's just very subtle, but it all accumulates. And as I say, you know, if you love dogs and the abuse that this dog goes, it's very touching and, you know, moving.
Yeah.
In the same way with Elvis, right. You know, and all this, you know. And, you really care about this dog like you care about Elvis when he's singing, I just want your love, you know.
Well, you're not going to extend that hand of grace to Donnie Trump, are you?
Well, as I said, that is the challenge. I remember writing my brother and his gang about this, that, you know, there's going to be a rash of movies out, and I think it's going to be very difficult for a filmmaker to really get to the point that, you know, as character, that anybody really gives a shit about this person, you know.
I'm him.
But
I
then,
mean it,
you know, with
yeah.
art, anything's possible. I don't know. I mean, that's what tragedy's about. I mean, you don't like Macbeth, you know.
Yeah.
You don't like Macbeth. Macbeth is a son of a bitch, you know. But
yeah.
with Lady Macbeth, you know, pushing him and all this, you really feel for the man because you understand the deep, dark, dirty humanity of all of us, you know, and
oh,
Shakespeare captures that, you know, and so you identify with him and say, oh God, yeah. And when he's stabbed through the heart at the end, you know, you go, oh, that's the way it goes, man. Yeah. You took the wrong
There's
path,
no.
you know, and
but
you're one of
over.
Us. You know, you're one of us. You're one of us.
I'd say you just went over that 70% head. they have not read Macbeth. I'm telling you, Call
well,
it a Wild, maybe. But.
That's true. Maybe they haven't read me. Well, Macbeth is basically a story of overweening ambition and the wife pushing
yeah.
the husband to basically sneak around at night and plunge a knife into the king's heart when he's come to visit in
right.
Scotland. Palace, you know,
your castle.
And
yeah.
the king is dead. The king is dead. Well, I wonder who did it, you know. And Macbeth's over there going, oh, who, me? You know?
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it doesn't deal with, I think there's a bigger element of madness, as
mm-hmm.
in King Lear or Hamlet,
yes.
with Donnie. I think
yeah.
Donnie has an element of madness that I don't know if Macbeth had at the character, but you know, I mean,
right.
how else can you explain some of the stuff he's doing now? He concedes the election and then he consciously
yeah.
stirs the heat up on the stew of his 70%.
Right.
You know, I mean,
well, this could backfire
base.
On him very well. Yeah. I mean, in fact, there's a story today about Georgia. You know, the two runoff elections that. Some of the Georgia Republicans, of course, the Secretary of State and the governor are on his shit list. And he's going to go this weekend, apparently, to Georgia. And apparently some Republicans in Georgia are not too sure they want him to come. Because there are voices from Georgia, some of them Republicans, saying, you know, convinced that Trump's right, that there's, you know, this is a very corrupt election, the Democrats are going to steal it. I mean, there are some Georgians who are saying, well, why should I even go vote? Why bother? You know, if it's a given, as Trump says, that they're going to steal it, it's corrupt. You know, they stole the one with Biden. I mean, forget it. Why should I even bother? You know, I'll just stay home.
Uh-huh.
Which is,
oh,
in my view,
so
wonderful. That's so good.
Yeah.
Trump should make about 16 trips down there. That's my feeling, you know. And because they're worried that what he's going to talk about is he's going to go down there into Georgia, and instead of talking about the glories and wonders of these two candidates, he's going to talk about himself and his grievances and his loss and his anger with Kemp, the governor, and Raffensperger, the Secretary of State. And Republicans are going, oh, my God, I don't think that's going to be good for us. So we'll see. Again, the future is full of all these questions, you know. We'll see.
First thing I thought when I heard this, when you just told me that, first thing I thought of, he's going to go down there and try to get the people to burn down Atlanta, you know, again.
Uh-oh, Sherman again, right, yeah.
He's going to think he's Sherman, you know, and he's going to go down there and burn Atlanta, except he's freeing the Uyghurs, you know.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's going to really help him in Georgia, right? Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of them down there. But I'll tell you one thing for sure. Hey, now listen, I called you alarmed. I also called Dave Lindorf that this can't be happening when I saw it. What
right.
was going on with Rudy Giuliani at Gettysburg? I mean, was that stagecraft or what? I mean, that was
God knows, Rudy Giuliani. I don't know if he'd figured out his hair dye problems at that point, but you know, it's like, what a goofball, you know? I mean, I think he talk about tragedy. I mean, here's a guy that was after 9/11 America's mayor. He was touted, you know, even by liberals, I suppose, like, hey. He rose to the occasion, you know, he has fallen so low that he's a joke. He's a joke. But yet he's unstoppable. You know, you just keep doing it because he doesn't know what else to do, I guess. I don't know.
When I called you last week, I was alarmed because on YouTube there was all these right side broadcasting was one
right.
of them I could name off, and there was others.
Mm-hmm.
who were live streaming this thing in Gettysburg. And I was thrown off because I thought it was a formal meeting of the state legislature having a public hearing on the election. And I thought, my God, this is the state legislature. They could, you know. I thought, but it
well,
was
state legislature is bad
after
enough.
After I called you, well, I read it was Gettysburg. And I thought, wait a minute. That's not the state capital of Pennsylvania.
No,
something's
Harrisburg. It's another burg, Harrisburg, that turned out
was,
to be nothing. That turned out
I'm
to be, hold. Like everything else, a, quote, nothing burger. You know, it was just a total nothing burger that everybody said, oh, my God, once again, he's wants them to, you know, a major win. Biden's way, way, way ahead, at least significantly ahead in Pennsylvania. And he wants them to throw out the election based on what?
Right.
You know, he's even said, I'm not alleging fraud. Well, what the hell are you here in court for? You know, come on, man, tell us what's going on. And in fact, one of the Pennsylvania judges is famous for describing, you know, as a creative kind of fellow, he's frustrated. He said, you know, your argument is like a Frankenstein monster. He says, it's a quote.
Oh, is that a
this is a legal document
a
quote. And it's like, this is, you know, it's like you bolted all this crap together, and, you know, and these monsters walking in, you know. What am I supposed to do with this? I'm a judge. And the guy that was actually appointed by Trump laughed it out of court.
Really?
He said, I'm sorry, I can't do this. I just can't do this, you know. You know, thank you, Mr. Trump. You didn't say this, but thank you for appointing me. But you did appoint me, and I am actually a serious judge, and I do have some integrity, and I want to hold on to what I have, you know. I mean, so don't. You know, I mean, stop this crap, but they can't. They can't
well,
stop
listen,
it.
John, now listen.
Yeah.
My God, now I watched part of that hearing. There were definite Georgia state legislators. There was Pennsylvania state legislatures.
Right.
Pennsylvania people, witnesses, making hysterical claims. They sounded
well,
hysterical.
There you go. Hysterical is the proper word.
But they were Pennsylvania people. I mean,
I have worked in the criminal justice area with prison reform and prison inmate or veteran inmates for off and on, maybe a little dilettantish probably, but for 20 years, you know? And to me, it is one of the most frustrating things I've ever done in my life. I've been up there several times trying to talk to people, Republicans, Democrats. It is controlled by Republicans. The Pennsylvania legislature, in my view, having lived here since 1975, is an absolute, utter, unmitigated joke. It is absurd, and if you expect anything reasonable, you know, you're deluding yourself. It's locked up, and you know it's all part of this James Carville, you know, Pennsylvania or Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, you know, with Alabama in between. It's a bizarre state in that respect, you know, and so the rural Republicans dominate, insult, and abuse, you know, the urban representatives, many of them black, that come from Philadelphia and places like that. So it's just an ongoing sorry event place, you know.
It's
and
not,
so to expect,
you know what,
of course you're going to get lunatic pro-Trump people at some Rudy Giuliani event. I mean, it's going nowhere. It's going nowhere.
Yeah.
In fact, Pennsylvania was famous for, you know, this whole idea of voter suppression, right?
Yeah.
For having a very candid Congress or state rep saying he was so proud that we had done something that we will. I mean, he literally smoking gun. Said that he was proud because we had prevented all these people from voting. You know, I mean, it was, I forget the details of it. It was like, you know, you read it, you had to read it three times saying, is he actually saying that, you know? In other words, he's so proud that they pulled it off that he's saying it not just to his Republican buddies in the smoke-filled room, but to everybody in the state. And they're going like, wait a minute, he just confessed, didn't he? Yes, he did.
Yeah, he did. Well, it's similar, but a little bit different in Kansas. But I will.
No, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. Yeah.
I just never realized that the state legislature. I mean, it's pretty tacky because they staged it like it was some sort of investigative hearing or something, you know. And I was like,
well, that's what they do. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
and I was like. Is this real? I mean, is this a real hearing? You know, a public hearing? And you know, it wasn't. It was just a way. It was staged.
Rudy Giuliani leaking black hair dye and walking into the room like Frankenstein with bolts in his head. You know, that's basically the way it looks to me.
Now, wait a minute. Did he do that in Pennsylvania, too? No, was that in Pennsylvania, too? I can't remember.
What?
His hair leak. His brain.
Oh,
well,
no, that was probably somewhere else. He probably said that was somewhere else.
That happened. Yeah,
I don't want to.
Yeah,
I don't want to get the facts wrong here. I mean, this.
Yeah, no,
we don't do fake news here. This is real news.
No, we try to qualify it when we're not sure.
Everything is, you know. Nothing but the truth. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I think he.
Where's
think
my
he
Bible?
I'll
swear on the Bible. Yeah.
Oh God, that won't work with me. They had the hair leak. I think the hair leak occurred before his big Gettysburg meetup.
Yeah.
You know, but that, I was amazed that they and they've it came out in the news. $176 million Donnie has raised for his in a PAC, a PAC political action committee for his use basically to pay off a. And there's a millionaire who donated $2 million, and he's suing one of the Trump front organizations. He's suing them. He wants his money back.
Oh my God!
I mean,
really? Well, that may be an indication of again of the future. They may be leaving like rats from a ship. You know, like wait a minute, I gave you $6 million.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I want to give you that anymore. Can I get it back? You know, and you know, and that's, this is, you know, the guy, what, he's got $400 million coming due, and he owes $900 million on some kind of real estate deals or something. I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling when you see the debt that he's facing, and plus the fact, as everybody says, including Mary Trump, that he totally overestimates his value, his wealth, and he may not be a billionaire. In fact, he may be in a hole, but that's where he's always operated from. Brilliantly, let's give him credit, you know, of being able to dance around and not pay people for work done, and to make positivity out of bankruptcy, and he has been very talented with that. You got to give him credit, but you know, as having been, as we said earlier, mistakenly elected president of the United States, and he didn't expect it, that suddenly the onus of sunshine, if you will, is all over him. You know, he's got lawsuits. He's got apparently 200 lawsuits that he still aren't finished, and you know, he's got criminal charges, and had he not president of the United States, he wouldn't have that problem. You know, it's talk about, you know, being hoisted on your own decisions, as Aristotle would say, is the key to tragedy. Being elected by mistake, president of the United States may in the end be his downfall. I don't know. We'll wait and see, you know.
Yeah, we've got another, 50 days or so? I mean, who knows? It's wonderful that we can dedicate so much time on his royal asshole. But, you know, the wonderful thing about this that I like about it is that, people have to be faced with the fact that he came out from under a rock in New Jersey, crossed over to New York, made himself a legend in his own time, himself.
And, in his own
mind. You know, with the connivance of Barbara Walters and a lot of people.
Of course.
And thought he was a joke, but he was an amusing joke. And I think Jane Mayer may have it. And I'm in a minority out here, not politically. I mean, not just politically, but I mean, even among the Trump haters, the people that don't like Trump at all.
Sure.
They don't go along with this thing that he's going to run. He's going to run and leave. You know, he'll stand and fight. He's crazy. You know, I don't know. I think I'm with Jane about it. Of course, she was sort of not. She was just really airing the speculation herself in the article. It's a great article.
She was talking to various people. Some say he wouldn't run. Some say run being flee rather than run in 2024. Some people say that he's going to try to co-opt the inauguration by having a very public event in which he will publicly announce his running for president in 2024 and open the campaign the day of the inauguration. Well, that's something he might do, you know. I mean, it's why not, you know. I mean, as I say, it's entertaining, and you don't know what comes next. And that's just what he's good at. You know, he's good at getting attention. And so we just have to buckle up and wait and see, you know.
I think you're on to something, John. I think we're gonna have to buckle up for the next 50 days.
Okay, buckle up. See you later, Mike.
See you, man. John Grant, listeners, what do you think? Be back on tomorrow with weather on the